Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is Blue Monday on the Savage Nation. So tired, thank no you, Fats. I'll play another guy. Wednesday. Be a miracle if I make it to Wednesday. The Stooges in the media. They already made him into God already. Walking on water. Schmucks in the media. I understand there's fires raging in L.A. I was down there last week. They're pretty bad. What I couldn't understand was, why didn't Obama just fly in and blow out the forest fires or simply issue an executive order to stop them? After all, he is God. Question. What position? I hear that Obama's offering a position to McCain. At least that's the rumor. The question to you is, what position should McCain assume in the Obama administration? To me, the answer is simple. The position that McCain should assume in the Obama administration would be... Thank you. A very fast group here. This is better than Phil Silvers at his worst. Third question of the day. Actually, there were no questions yet. There's a big story about bailing out General Motors and Ford. Now, over the years, I've said they can't be allowed to fail. I'm not so sure right now. And I'm asking you, given the horrendous performance by Detroit's Big Three, do you think it would be better to send each employee a check and let them go bankrupt than to waste it on a bailout? According to the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, he says send each employee a check rather than bailing out these companies. They're producing cars that people just don't want anymore. And the workers are all unionized and making money that I guess they can't afford. You take a look at the production line of General Motors today as a result of the demands of the unions and the EEOC. No wonder they're going out of business. Just take a look at the production lines. Looks like they're doing it for a hobby. It's not your grandfather's production line. It's not your father's production line. It's a new face of America's production line, which means it's an unproductive production line. So the question to you is should we just say no to Detroit or bail them out? What are the numbers involved here? How many jobs in North America are supplied by General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler? I'm going to read you the numbers. You're going to remember them. I never remembered this stuff, so I'm not going to read them to you. Just know it's a lot of jobs. But what do you think would happen if they went out of business? Well, of course, the big winners would be the Japanese. See, that's the subtext. And then there's another subtext that, of course, nobody in the media seems to remember except me, because they don't have the brains of history. They have where the history vacuole in their brain is filled with mush and mud. It was the big three that built our tanks, that built our trucks, and other materiel during World War II. If you would permit the big three to go totally out of business, we would lose the ability to build our own tanks, our own military trucks, and other wheeled vehicles, or other, let us say, land vehicles, for any potential future engagement of the military, which means we would be left defenseless. In that sense, I don't think we can just say no to Detroit. However, something needs to be done, and I think they have to fire a good percentage of their workers. I think the unions have to give up a lot of the benefits. I think the numbers of cars have to change, and I think the type of cars have to change. But I don't think that from a national security point of view, I would recommend letting these companies go out of business, or we will be up you-know-what without a you-know-what. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. There are other topics in the news today that I think are worth talking about, frankly, and I want to talk about them by going to michaelsavage.com, which has become sort of my journal or log of stories I've collected for you throughout the day. So the number one story is that a U.S. senator, if you can believe it, an actual U.S. senator agrees with Savage that our Treasury Secretary, Paulson, may be bailing out his friends. And that senator will be on this show during this program today. That's correct. As the world turns, there's actually one U.S. senator left who actually understands that Henry Paulson may actually be bailing out his friends. That's correct, Senator Inhofe, the man who knows what's going on in the world, I guess because he lives in a sane state, you know, called Oklahoma. He says, cancel the blank check. And he criticizes Henry Paulson for changing the $700 billion bailout plan. And he also says, it's outrageous that the American people don't know, that Congress doesn't know, how much money Hank Paulson has given away to anyone. The Oklahoma Republican told the Tulsa World. He said, it could be to his friends. It could be to anybody else. We don't know. There is no way of knowing, close quote. Inhofe's comments, unusually pointed even for a senator known for being blunt, come on the heels of Paulson's shift in how he thinks the bailout fund should be spent. So you should understand that I've been saying this since this started. I was always skeptical about Paulson, primarily because he came from Goldman Sachs. I didn't like that. I didn't like it in particular because I thought that it was a little too close for comfort, and I didn't think that he was thinking necessarily for the good of the American people. Common sense would dictate he was thinking what was good for his former company. And then when I saw that he permitted Goldman Sachs, after the bailout, he permitted Goldman Sachs to become a sort of bank to qualify for a handout, I knew that the fix was in. So that's story number, you know, whatever it is. There are other stories on michaelsavage.com, and I'll get to them slowly but surely. Ortega renews Nicaragua dictatorship while U.S. turns his head. Outraged by Ortega's behavior, European governments are moving to cut off funding. But the Bush administration's reaction has been laconic. That's because George Bush is the most liberal president we've had in over 35 years. By all definitions, we've just had 8 years of the most liberal president of modern times, as you well understand. And I've been telling you that, of course. I don't get credit for it, but I don't need the credit. I need cash. Ortega renews Nicaragua dictatorship while U.S. turns its head. Let's see, what else do I want to talk about today? You saw what happened last week that nobody will report except WorldNet Daily and Breitbart. You saw what the mainstream media is worth. Well, I have some prize words for the midstream media, but don't worry about it. Most of them will be in cafes within 2 years planning the revolution. The questionable group CAIR, C-A-I-R, attempted to extract cash from me, Michael Savage, and the judge here in San Francisco rejected their desire to take $182 or some odd thousand dollars from me. She threw the case out. Now, you got to understand something. This ruling is the only good news the conservative movement has had in a very long time. You would think the golfer would note it. You would think the wall banger would note it. You would think the man in green, the leprechaun, would note it. And that should tell you something about people in the business. It's each man for himself, myself included. Make no mistake about it. Nobody helps anybody else. And you should understand that. This is a big story. Why was it buried? I'll let you figure it out. Israeli mob kingpin killed in car bombing. A car carrying one of Israel's top mafia kingpins exploded as it traveled in central Tel Aviv, killing him and threatening to unleash an all-out war in Israel's increasingly violent underworld. And we have that story up on the website as well. And it's an interesting story because if you read it, it is really amazing to learn the following. The Israeli mafioso are fighting over, guess what? They're fighting over recycling fees. Apparently, it's a cash business. And you environmentalists thought it was really good for global warming. Little did you know, huh? Go figure. Huh? I'll be back. Savage. So, look, the big argument going around is whether or not the auto manufacturers in Detroit should be bailed out. As you well know, Nancy Pelosi is really bailing out the unions, in my opinion. Most of the money will wind up going into the hands of the unions one way or the other. That's what many of us think. I think it's just a payoff. But let's look at the bigger issue. some people are knee-jerk libertarians or knee-jerk conservatives, and they're saying, well, let them fail. You know, they'll get lean and mean if you let them fail. They'll come back stronger. That's rubbish. They will disappear forever. You know, remember the Edsel. You'll never see an American car company again. And the big winners will be the Japanese. Make no mistake about it. To me, it would be a disaster to see Detroit's Big Two disappear. I don't care about Chrysler because it's not an American company. I don't know how they're lumping Chrysler in with Ford and General Motors when Chrysler is owned by a German company. I mean, what, am I the only one who understands this? So let's focus on GM and Ford for a minute. If we lose those production lines, our national security goes right out the window. We would no longer be able to make mechanized equipment, period. And I don't want to go to Japan to make my tanks, if you don't mind. I have another solution, a real simple solution, which I don't hear anyone discussing. I don't hear it from Mr. Bush, the open market maniac. And I don't hear it from the Democrats, who are just union bailout maniacs. Hey, anyone hear of the word tariffs on foreign cars? Why not slap a $5,000 tariff on every foreign car? Never heard of that one? That's a good shot in the arm for the U.S. auto industry. It would make Americans buy American cars. It would give us an incentive. When you want to protect an industry, you protect the industry. Every other country on earth has protectionism except us. Bush, the genius, doesn't believe there should be any protectionism for American manufacturers. But he accepts protectionism for every country that we send our products to. So I say a nice, healthy tariff slapped on foreign cars would be a real good shot in the arm for General Motors and Ford under a few conditions. Wage cuts, benefit cuts, and things of that nature would come along with those tariffs until the industry straightened out. So why don't you read any of that? Why don't you read that somebody in the media has a brain big enough to come up with something other than let him die or bail him out? There's nothing in between. I'm the only one who can figure out that there's something in between called a tariff on foreign cars. Do you understand what I just said to you? Again, this is original thinking. And again, you're not ready for it because I don't know. I don't know what's happened to Americans. They can't think. The government can't think. The people can't think. And I know many people who are very successful who think, who agree with me. The businessmen that I know agree with almost everything I ever say on this show. The really successful businessmen that I know who made it on their own, created great products, never stole anything from anybody, and give away millions to charity, all agree with Michael Savage. The little fish in the media who have never run a hot dog stand don't know what to think, and they disagree with me all the time, because if you gave them a hot dog stand, they would run it out of business. So let me reiterate again. You're getting an either-or question from the media. Should the automakers be bailed out? Well, first of all, take Chrysler off the table. That's number one. It's not a Detroit automaker. It is owned by a German company. So let's be very clear. Is it not a German company? I believe it is. Then, so you go with Ford and General Motors. I say we cannot afford to lose them for national security purposes and that they should not be permitted to fail, but they must cut back on benefits and salaries, number one. And number two, we must slap huge tariffs on foreign cars. That's my opinion. Agree or disagree? 1-800-449-8255. Maine, Shane, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, you speak for the forgotten man all across this country. You know, I had been against the buyout, you know, not only the $750 billion buyout, but this buyout within a buyout for a lot of different reasons. But you kind of shed some light on an aspect of it I hadn't thought of, which was, you know, that the military aspect of it, you know, the ability to build our own machinery, you know, when the time comes.
Well, that's right. And you got to understand that many of the people in the media hate the military. This is a golden opportunity to destroy military production lines should we need them. This is an attempt to destroy and totally destroy our military infrastructure in this country. I mean, we have very little shipbuilding left. Thank God we have General Electric and we have Boeing that can still make an airplane.
You know, I believe that Reagan in the 80s put a tariff on Japanese cars, but if you go back to the Depression and the Smoot-Hawley tariffs, you know, do we run the risk of alienating other nations or any retribution on their part?
Of course you do. That's correct. But since we are still the largest economy in the world, the last I checked, they better think very carefully about retaliating with tariffs. See, Bush believes in this open market, free trade, open borders mentality, which, as you know, has resulted in the greatest meltdown of the economy in over 100 years. George Bush did this to this country. I don't want to hear any more rubbish about Barney Frank. Barney Frank is an idiot, and Barney Frank is a traitor as far as I'm concerned. But Barney Frank is not president. Barney Frank is an all-around minuscule, disgusting human being. And Barney Frank, in my opinion, should be investigated for his dealings with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. But that's a separate issue. It's a sub-issue. The president is George Bush. George Bush's free trade policies caused the greatest meltdown of our economy in 100 years. And if people can't put two and two together, they're never going to come up with four. I can put two and two together, and I am telling you how to save this economy. One of them is to put tariffs on foreign goods and start supporting domestic manufacturers. I remember when we once had American electronics, we had American television sets that were excellent. And do you know how the American electronics industry was destroyed? It was not because Sylvania and Dumont and others made bad television sets. It was because Japanese manufacturers conspired to dump their electronics on our shores at prices lower than what they cost them to make. In other words, they sold them here at costs lower than what it was costing them to manufacture, strictly in a trade war to destroy our manufacturers. And our presidents at that time were also corrupt and numbskulls and permitted this to happen. Consequently, we can't make a television set anymore in America. Do you remember America once made cameras? Do you think the cameras were below standards around the world? Well, you could argue that the German cameras were better, but there was virtually no Japanese camera industry at the time. Again, they dumped their cameras, which were excellent, by the way. I have an old 1970 Nikon F manual camera. I know how good they were. But those cameras were being sold in this country at lower cost than it cost to make them in Japan. Again, our camera industry was destroyed. If you want to permit the Japanese and other foreign manufacturers to continue to conspire to destroy our auto industry, then you're a darn fool. That's all I can say to you. I'm against it. I say do not let General Motors and Ford fail. I say let Chrysler take a walk. I say cut back on the union costs of wages and phenomenal benefits that the workers can no longer enjoy because we can't afford it. And number three, I say slap a large tariff on foreign cars immediately. Let us say $5,000 up to $30,000 and escalated beyond that. You'll see a real resurgence of interest in American cars, which are very good cars, by the way.
Savage.
We are talking about Detroit. Some say let them fail. I said don't let them fail. I said force the unions to cut back on benefits and wages slap a tariff on foreign cars. It would encourage people to buy American cars, which is still quite excellent. I also said that I didn't care about what happened to Chrysler because it was a foreign company. I was wrong about Chrysler. Little did I know that Chrysler, in May of 07, Daimler Chrysler AG, announced the sale of 80% of Chrysler Group to American. Hold on to your hats now. Look at the rock I just picked up and watch the big snake that comes out from under it. To American private equity firm Cerberus Capital Management LP. Listen to what I just said to you. Chrysler sold 80% of itself to American private equity firm Cerberus Capital. Now, I don't think you know who Cerberus Capital is. But I do know myself that a name comes to mind, and perhaps I'm wrong. The last I checked, Cerberus Capital Management was under the auspices of a former Treasury Secretary called John Snow, who had been in the railroad business as well here in America. Now, I wonder whether Cerberus Capital has already received bailout funds in the current round of giveouts by Paulson. Can anyone look it up and see if Cerberus Capital has already received money from our government, meaning from us? So that's number one. But let's put that aside and go back to Chrysler and Ford. And we'll leave the rock that I just opened up to the sunshine now that's going to pour into Cerberus Capital because of what I just did. We pulled a rock off Cerberus Capital. We want to know if Cerberus Capital, which owns 80% of Chrysler, has already received money as a so-called financial firm. What, now they want money as an auto firm? These guys are such crooks, in my opinion. I've never seen such crookedness in my life. Never. Never. But you see, when you don't have a government watching out for the people, but instead you have a government robbing from the people to give to their friends and business, all is lost, and you wind up with a creep like Barack Hussein Obama as president. An unknown man of unknown birth, of no qualities whatsoever other than charisma. Now, if you think charisma is going to save America, you're out of your mind. Why don't you just have him go down to Los Angeles and blow the fire out? Let him go down there and go puff. Maybe the fires will go out. Santa Maria, Frankie, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. You're absolutely right about what you said about the stupidity in our government, but we've got to protect our important American industries, especially the auto industry. And you're right about the tariffs. I think every foreign-owned company car should be slapped with the tariff. But not only that, but I think in American cars should all be given a tax credit to the people who buy those.
Well, of course those would be ways to save the company without bailing them out. But why are we not hearing it? Because lobbyists for Toyota, lobbyists for the other foreign companies have bought our politicians like cheap tricks in the lowest brothel in town. We don't have a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. We have a government of the lobbyists, by the lobbyists, and for the lobbyists. Abe Lincoln will be turning over in his grave. Grand Rapids, Zach, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I applaud your idea about a tariff, but the problem is that when you look at a Toyota Camry versus a Chevy Impala, that Toyota Camry employs far more Americans than that Chevy Impala. That Chevy Impala is built mostly in Canada and Mexico, so by slapping a tariff on the Toyota, you would in fact be hurting the American people. Now, there are other companies like...
Whoa, slow down. Where is the Toyota made?
Alabama.
I understand what you're saying. The Japanese were very smart. They came here because they thought there'd be a backlash, and they said, we're American companies too. And so they started to build plants. Now, they got tax credits that were awesome to bring their factories to Tennessee and Alabama and places like that. I understand. I remember when it happened. Well, I would say they're still a foreign-owned company, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, but why would...
All right, because the profits go right back to Tokyo. The profits don't go to America. They go to Tokyo. So any company that sees its profits going to an offshore, or excuse me, to a foreign government or foreign entities, will also pay tariffs. But let us say if they have a plant here, you give them a reduced tariff.
Well, then you should tariff.
I'm trying to be reasonable about it. I'm coming up with an idea that isn't being discussed, so we're discussing it. Slap a tariff of X thousand on a foreign manufacturer that doesn't have a plant here and make it 50% of that for a foreign manufacturer that does make the car here. Now, as far as GM making the cars up in Canada and Mexico, and I know about the maquiladoras in Mexico, I understand what's been going on to escape labor in America. That could be part of the problem, but there's a solution in that as well. If they're to get any kind of help in the form of tariffs or reduced employee benefits, they're going to have to bring their factories back to America and take them out of Canada and Mexico.
Amen, brother.
Look, we are reasonable people. And we're trying to come up with reasonable solutions to a giant problem. I wouldn't expect the politicians to think this way because they're thinking only in terms of their lobbyists and what the lobbyists tell them to think and what the other politicians tell them to think. But we the people are the creative force of America, not them. We are the engines of creativity in this country. So I'm trying to lead a discussion here. You understand that? All right. For the rest of the hour, I'll start giving out free copies of Psychological Nudity to anyone who gets on the phone. A line in this hour. We open the lines up to 1-800-449-8255. New York City, WOR. Ralph, you're on the Savage Nation.
Frankly, Michael, McCain's meandering about and kowtowing to those very people who were so vicious to him. That gap-toothed guy in the evening, David Letterman, who's not funny in the least, has made joke after joke after joke. And just the way he's so comfortable, Michael, and you put it very, very well last week or the week when you said it, he's so comfortable as a loser. And it's every time I see him going about and just making himself available to these people that were his arch enemies.
Yeah, it shows you that he was never qualified to be president.
Say it again, I'm sorry.
It shows you that McCain was never qualified to be president.
No.
And it also shows you that he was a fall guy. You know, I know someone who's an arch conservative, and she said to me, sure, we have a left-wing hippie, you know, lawyer as president now, but in a way he's more competent than McCain ever was. We'll just have to fight him when he gets too far to the left. But McCain was never up to this job. This guy was a loser from the get-go.
You're absolutely right, and you pegged it. He never stood a chance, and with the economic crash, that did him in completely. But
Ralph, listen, that's why Obama won. It wasn't so much that everyone loved Obama. It was that everyone couldn't believe that they would run an old fogey like McCain, a compromised man at best for the job, and they were worried about his age. Then they picked Sarah Palin, who had no experience whatsoever to run with the nuclear football. We didn't know who she was. She was not really in the federal governmental system. And a lot of people said, well, wait a minute, she may be a nice lady, she may have the right ideas, but that doesn't qualify her for the vice presidency, particularly when you have an old man who could get sick or drop dead on the job, God forbid. So they shot themselves in the foot on two accounts. If they had run a young, dynamic, real conservative who espoused closing the borders, protecting America, and rolling back some of the Bush liberalism, he would have won by a landslide. I keep reading the other garbage, Ralph, that now we have a mandate for the left wing, a mandate for communism, a mandate for socialism, a mandate for reaching out to gays, a mandate to reach out to Latinos. Total rubbish. What the Republican Party needs to do is reach out to the conservative base that it basically shafted. Wouldn't you agree with me on that, Ralph?
No, certainly would. And frankly, Michael, we were very, and not nominating Romney, who was the obvious choice. I mean, I wasn't crazy about him either, but just because of the fact that he was a Mormon, we did not nominate him.
I didn't have anything in not nominating him. I don't know who did it to him. Maybe the Republicans figured they were going to lose. They wanted to lose because the economy was going to crash, and they figured let the hot potato fall into Nancy Pelosi's hands, and then in 4 years they'll come back. I don't know what the thinking is at the upper levels, but I do know this, Ralph. You're going to get a free copy of Psychological Nudity if you can name one story other than Fat Al's Tuna or Dead Man's Pants that you can't wait to read.
Well, being Italian, I have to deal with the spaghetti. And those nice big fluffy meatballs were...
Okay, when pasta was spaghetti. Ralph, you're getting it now. By the way, you're not going to believe this. I got to tell you like it is. I found out just this morning that the Fulfillment House found 800 additional copies of the first edition. I thought that was sold out, and I had ordered a rush second printing, but we found 800 copies of the first edition first printing in the warehouse owing to some statistical error. That's what's still left in the first edition first printing, but don't worry. I mean, you can get the first edition second printing, which we're printing right now. It's being printed as I speak, probably shipped as I speak to the warehouse, but nevertheless, there's 800 copies of that first edition first printing left. 1-800-449-8255. We're having a vigorous discussion on whether we should just say no to Detroit. As usual, I have tried to introduce some novel thinking to the discussion. Otherwise, I would agree with the stooges who say, talk radio is irrelevant. If talk radio continues to be just Democrat, Republican, it is worthless. It is totally irrelevant. Flash report from the Drudge Report, I'm shocked. I'm just surprised. Clinton plans to accept the job of Secretary of State offered by Obama. Well, I guess we can now talk about that. Is Bill Clinton qualified to become Secretary of State? That's right, I said Bill Clinton. Now you say, well, why do you say that? It's Hillary, isn't it? No, it's not just Hillary. It's her husband, the globetrotter, Bill Clinton, and his deep ties to lobbyists. And his deals in foreign countries. I would think that if we still had a Republican Party, they would fight like crazy to expose Bill Clinton's earnings as a private citizen and what impact that might have. Because I am frankly quite concerned that we'll have another Dianne Feinstein and Dick Blum situation on our hands. How do we know what kind of deals Bill Clinton is involved in or Bill Clinton might be planning while his wife would be Secretary of State? That should worry anybody in Congress. Will it? Of course not. Because there's so many different benefits to families of congressmen and senators. You wouldn't want to investigate Barbara Boxer's connections to her family, her family's connections to benefits to her as a senator, would you? Would you want to look into any other senator's family's dealings? No. That's why they're not going to look at this. This is going to be rubber stamped. The bowling pin of bowling pins will now become Secretary of State. I'll be right back. Savage.
Well,
here's the benefit of having a late show on in America, a show that's later than the others, which is the news just broke. Clinton plans to accept the job of Secretary of State offered by Obama. Clinton to accept. Now, on the face of it, it's a very smart political move on the Obama team, smarter than the dumb Republicans who don't know what they're doing at any turn. I should say the Bush Republicans, because that's a special breed of particular doofuses who usually throw out the number two man. In other words, you fight with a guy in the primary. Then when you become president, you cast him aside like you never heard of him. Idiots. What you do is you take him into the cabinet like Obama's doing. But the problem here is she comes with baggage. I don't mean Whitewater. I don't mean Marcy Park. I don't mean Travelgate. I don't mean Troopergate. No, I don't mean any of that. I don't mean Chinagate. No, no, no. We've all forgotten that. If we can accept it, we've forgotten that Jesse Jackson spit in the salads of white people, and now he's a very distinguished man. We can certainly forget Troopergate, Watergate, Chinagate, and all the other gates of Hillary, that wonderful person that she is. The real big question is Bill Gates. And I don't mean Bill Gates. That'll be stolen tomorrow, of course, by somebody. But I think Bill Gates is Hillary's biggest baggage. And I didn't say Bill Gates. I want you to get my quote correctly. I think Bill Gates is the biggest problem that Hillary's going to have. But then she's not going to have a problem because the Schmendrick Republicans are going to rubber stamp her. They're going to trip over themselves to look like the congenial Prozac-taking old men that they are. Instead of grilling her about Bill Gates and what that might mean in terms of her decisions, you know, like a deal with Belarus, like a pipeline through, let us say, Kosovo. What does her husband have to do with it, if anything? Will she recuse herself if she blah, blah, blah? No. In a way, though, I'm relieved because she's an intelligent woman who at least can articulate, thank God that he didn't pick that old Yenta. See, there's a silver lining. Thank God I didn't have to look at that old hag. She can go back to lobbying for the United Arab Emirates, that Madam Halfbright. She could do a special cookbook, Madeleine Albright's kosher recipes, or Madeleine Albright's special recipes for the North Korean dictator. But thank God I don't have to look at her again. We'll see what's in the Secretary of State. That's basically a left-wing position that undermines the military. The job of Secretary of State is to undermine the U.S. military at every turn. So she'd be good at that. Maybe she could hire Bernie Ward when he comes out of prison. The talk show host from San Francisco who used to be working for Barbara Boxer as a military aide and an expert on the military, even though he's never fired a Daisy BB gun. Who knows who she'll hire? But that's a news story. So let's bring it into the mix of things that we're going to argue over today in the Savage Nation. Clinton plans to accept the job of Secretary of State offered by Obama developing on Drudge. Paper, Clinton to accept. And the question is, do you agree or disagree with the appointment of Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State? Phone number 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. We'll have the full details of that story up immediately. It's in the guardian.co.uk. How come the Guardian can put out a story faster than the New York Times? Alfred E. Newman just appointed her. I mean, Barack Obama just appointed her. I know they think he's FDR and Lincoln combined. Sorry, but this old guy, when he looks at Barack Obama, sees Alfred E. Newman from Mad Comics. He will always be Alfred E. Newman to me. Hillary Clinton will always be something other than Hillary Clinton to me as well. God, she looks like Scarface in this picture. Oh, that. Let's forget the Botox stories. Let's not get them started already. Blah, blah, blah. Obama's advisors have begun looking into Bill Gates. Yeah, I told you, Bill Gates. You heard it first on the Savage Nation. Obama's advisors have begun looking into Bill Clinton's foundation, which distributes millions of dollars to Africa to help with development to ensure that there is no conflict of interest. But Democrats do not believe that the vetting is likely to be a problem. Of course not. Why should it be a problem if they say so? Clinton would be well-placed to become the country's dominant voice in foreign affairs, replacing Condoleezza Rice Aroney. Since being elected senator for New York, she has specialized in foreign affairs. Well, her husband specialized in many domestic affairs, didn't he? Didn't Bill Clinton specialize only in domestic affairs until he became a private citizen? Then he branched out and specialized in foreign affairs as well. God only knows how far and wide his foreign affairs have gone. Although she supported the war in Iraq, Sheen Obama basically granted withdrawal of American troops. Yeah, right. I'll believe it when I see it. Clinton, who still harbors hopes of a future presidential run, had to weigh up whether she would be better placed by staying in the Senate, which offers a platform for life, or making the more uncertain career move to the Secretary of State job. Well, that's interesting. If she becomes Secretary of State, that opens up a senator's position in New York. I guess Charles Schumer could fill both of them. He's got a big enough mouth for both. He could be senator from New York and senator from New York. He could just cross-dress when he wants to pretend that he's the senator from New York from her district, right? I mean, their policies are identical. You wouldn't want a government of the people, by the people, and for the people in New York, would you? You wouldn't want one Democrat and one Republican, God forbid. Like we in California, we have two senators from Brooklyn. We have Feinstein and Boxer. Take your choice. We have no senator from California yet. We haven't been able to find one. Now, let's see what they're going to offer McCain. Asked by a reporter whether he would work with Obama, McCain, who has long favored a bipartisan approach to politics, replied, obviously, bipartisan. He's a compromised fool. Sources on both sides said Obama did not offer McCain a cabinet job, but focused on how the senator for Arizona could help to guide through Congress legislation they both strongly favor. It's simple. Have the man get up and do stupid jokes and walk on all fours. That's all. I asked you at the beginning. I said, what position should McCain assume in the Obama administration? Answer. He should assume the position of being on his hands and knees. Rim shot. Oh, they got it right this time. At least that worked. McCain sat stiffly. Let's not go there. Because you start saying McCain sat stiffly. You think already the Viagra jokes. You think Bob Dole. Please, I pray to God he doesn't do Cialis or... Dole has the Viagra franchise. No, he's not doing it anymore, I hear. Let's not do Viagra jokes. I'm not in the mood. I need chocolate, but I'm not going to tell you why I don't want a piece of chocolate now. My whole life I didn't eat chocolate since childhood because I avoided migraines as a result. But now, in order to get energy for the show, this post-election doldrum, I've been eating chocolate. It's wonderful, but you get a hangover from it. The next day you're worse than the day before, the hypoglycemia. And I'm saving it for a scotch after the show to take care of the sore throat that I have. That's a miraculous way to stop a sore throat. I wrote the book on vitamins. Don't call me about vitamins, please. But at the first signs of a sore throat, a 90-year-old taught me this. He doesn't even drink. You get a high-class scotch, and you gargle it. I drink it. He spits it out. He's a fool. Yet he's 90. Who can say?
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Hey, we've got breaking news on the Savage Nation. We're faster than any newspaper in America, which is why we're thriving and they're diving. And that is that Hillary Clinton, you know, they ran it up the flagpole, blah, 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 over the weekend. So now she's going to accept Secretary of State. But my headline and my question to you is this, and it's up on michaelsavage.com, top left. It is my lead story. We've moved the story about should GM and Ford be allowed to fail, and I'll talk about that again in a minute. Our new lead story for this hour, and I want your opinion on this, is, will Bill Gates trouble Hillary at state? That's how I posed it. Now, what is Bill-Gate? We're not talking about the man who owns Microsoft. We're talking about the Gate-hyphenated problems that Hillary was plagued with during her years as co-president. I remember some of them, Cattlegate. What are all the Gates? Does anyone remember them? There was Cattlegate, Travelgate, Marcygate. There was China Gate. There were so many gates to questions. It's all been swept under the rug. You know, she's been a senator for all these years now, a senator that's never at home. But the people in New York apparently like peripatetic senators, or else they would have thrown her out a long time ago. Apparently, like Californians, they don't care whether the senator does their work or not. That's a nice word, peripatetic. Look it up. But she's a peripatetic senator all these years. Now she's going to be Secretary of State. So she's trained to be a Secretary of State because of her peripatetic past as senator. The question is, will Bill Gates trouble Hillary at State? Do you think it's a good idea? Or I'll make it simple, all right? We'll do the fourth grade version. What do you think of Hillary becoming Secretary of State? Okay, we'll do the simple version. Is it a good idea or a bad idea? Can't we do something a little different? What can you say about it? It's a done deal anyway. Well, you're going to influence Alfred E. Newman there. Alfred E. Newman's advisors already picked her because the women, this and that, the women need a Secretary of State job. I don't. Why does she want it for? The bigger question to me is who's going to take a Senate seat in New York? That's what I'd like to know. As I said in the last hour, you know, not so laughingly, Schumer's got a big enough mouth for both Senate seats. He could be Senator Schumer, and when he takes her role, he could cross-dress and be Senator Schumer again. That'd be good for his ego. That's a perfect job for him. Who are they going to put in that liberal position? Hillary's Senate seat was originally supposed to have gone to Kennedy, who died in a plane crash. We don't even want to look into that. We don't even want to talk about that. Had there been no plane crash for the young Kennedy son, who died with his lovely wife and her sister, often upside down plane bag. Remember that? Had he not died, he'd be senator from New York. She'd be senator from Bagland. She'd be senator from Arkansas. Where would she be today? What was she before that? Did she have a job? No. So that ever a lot of people asked about that plane crash. Well, we can't ask about the plane crash. That's under the water. That's gone. Another story. So what do you think about it? What do you think about Secretary of State? Could you take down the caller saying a woman Secretary of State is a bad idea? We just had one. We had one before that. What a bad idea. What do you want? Like, who should be Secretary of State? I have my ideas who should be Secretary of State. It should be an American of a Muslim background who has a military career that's distinguished, like General Abizad should be Secretary of State. How do you like that? I can pull that out of the hat. Why do I say it? Because the Arab world, with whom we have the biggest problems on the earth, only respect men, and they would more so respect an American of a Muslim background. Put that into your quiver and quill it. Hawaii, Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation.
Thanks for taking my call, Michael. I just had a comment really quickly about the Clintons working as Secretary of State for Mr. Obama. I think that you got these two families, you know, the Clintons have this history. Just taking people, eliminating them when they get in their way, and just destroying their lives. I mean, people, when they were in the White House, when they first got in there, they just eliminate these people. And then you have a Chicago-style politician, similar backgrounds, and you have these two people going to be going at it. And I say going at it because I don't think they've made the nice that the media kind of puts off that they have. You know, I think Hillary still despises Obama, and I think she still wants the office in 4 years. So I think if Bill Gates is going to be any trouble to Hillary, they're going to keep it in their back pocket for the, you know, first couple of years. And then when it comes time to run again,
You think that she'll use that position to undermine Obama's presidency is what you're suggesting.
I feel if the cards fall in the right place, it'll put her in a perfect position to undermine his presidency.
Well, then we should thank God that he's picking her.
That's just my biggest. You know, I just heard it on your show. You know,
You did, because the news just broke minutes ago. I mean, they've been running it up the flagpole, so to speak, all weekend. You know, it was a given. You know, that's how the newspapers work. They're just a medium, an organ of the government. That is the Democrat government. It's a government media complex. So when Izvestia says Hillary might be offered position, they're doing what the government, meaning the Democrat machine, wants them to do. All of the ABC, CBS, NBC, New York Times, and cable outlets. My friend, since you're such a good caller from Hawaii, how's the weather in Hawaii?
It's pouring rain right now, man. It was beautiful.
Oh, I almost went. Am I glad I didn't go?
Glad.
We were going to go from L.A. and take a three-dayer. Because we were down in L.A. and it was the fires, so I left L.A. just before the fires came up to the Hollywood area I was staying in. And we were going to go to Hawaii. I said, you know what? I don't think so. So the rain came. Huh? Actually, the rain in Hawaii is beautiful.
It is beautiful, but it's kind of a, I mean, I've been on the island. It's kind of a cold rain. It's not kind of the tropical rain. I hate to say relatively cold. I'll say relatively cold rain for the island.
Oh, you got an Alaskan storm that came down to Hawaii.
Yeah, this thing, all the wind got switched around. You've been in the islands. You understand how trade winds work. When they go the other way, it just messes everything up. No one.
Oh, yeah, you go crazy. It's like AC and DC. The power in your head reverses.
Yeah, so we got the wind. I live on the windward side, and it's now been the leeward side, and
you got the wind coming in off the other side now.
It's coming down out of the mountains, which kind of makes it, I live right.
So the surfers are probably unhappy.
Oh, yeah, they're trying to hold the contest of the North Shore right now, and they've all just been blown out.
Well, Jeff, I have an idea, you know. Since Obama is God, maybe he should go over to Hawaii and demand that the wind reverse course.
Well, you know, he was born here, so everybody.
That's right. He has special powers. I mean, he could go, if he really had the wherewithal, he could go to L.A. and stop the fires just by blowing on the fires down in L.A., and he should go to Hawaii and reverse the winds and make them normal. Otherwise, the liberals are liable to have a nervous breakdown because they think he can walk on water. Jeff, name one story in psychological nudity, and you get a free copy of the 800 copies that remain.
I love the island, so I'd love to hear about the Fiji Islands, your time in the Fiji Islands.
Wow, a real thinker over there. Stay on the line. You get the story Fiji Islands in 1969 and how Fijians were unique. There's actually another Hawaii story in it. First boat in Hawaii sailing for first time. Two stories from Hawaii. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's take some callers on Hillary Clinton being made Secretary of State. And my question of the day is, will Bill Gates affect Hillary at state? I like iambic pentameter. I grew up in another age, so you have to forgive me. There it is. It's up on my website. Thank you, Art. That was quick. I have such a great team at michaelsavage.com. Will Bill Gates trouble Hillary at state? Hillary Clinton plans to accept the job of Secretary of State offered by Barack Hussein Obama, who is reaching out to former rivals to build a broad coalition administration. He's also, I understand, going to give a job to Chuck Hagel, another rhino. All the rhino Republicans who stabbed the conservatives in the back are getting jobs with Obama. They're getting rewarded. Oh, it's going to be a fun number of years. You know, it really is. That's the beauty of democracy, is that even if your opposition wins, then your business gets better. In other words, it would have been if McCain won, it would have been just as good, since he wasn't a real conservative. What's the difference? New York, Eileen, what do you think? Hillary at state, yes or no?
Michael, my question is, as a New Yorker, I wanted to know what her qualifications was to become senator to begin
with. Well, the operational word that I used was peripatetic. Since she has been a peripatetic senator from New York, she's got a perfect background to be Secretary of State. If anybody knows what I'm referring to, they're going to win a book by calling the show. But I know you're calling about what are her qualifications. Her qualifications are simply popularity, and her husband who schmoozed with every leader of the world doing deals.
Well, other than sleeping with the president, I don't know what else she did.
She's been senator from New York for quite a while, hasn't she been a great senator?
But when she got in, what were her qualifications then? She didn't do
anything before. But you New Yorkers loved her.
No, not all of us. Some of us, not all of us.
I know, but the others who didn't love her don't exist in America, according to the New York Times. You're a non-existent audience. You've gone away. You've disappeared. The 48% of Americans who voted for McCain don't exist in America.
Yeah, that's true.
You see. That's the way they went. Sacramento, Nick, you're on the Savage Nation, KSTE country. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. I really don't think Bill's going to be a problem for her. He may even help her out a little bit because of his traveling around the world and all the stuff that he does. The only thing I'm really upset about is the fact that you guys left me with McCain. I've been a lifelong Democrat, and I didn't vote for Obama. But
I didn't do it. You don't blame me for sticking you with McCain. I'm not a Republican.
I know you're an independent.
I'm an independent guy. I didn't trust McCain from the get-go because of his compromised positions. I would rather have seen a very clear battle between a true liberal, who was Obama, the most liberal senator in the Senate, with, let us say, the most conservative senator in the Senate. We didn't see that, though, did we? You had the left versus the far left. And apparently the far left won because the conservatives didn't vote at all. They just didn't go and vote. That's all. Now, I don't agree with you because, listen to this. Obama's advisors have begun looking into Bill Clinton's foundation, which distributes millions of dollars to Africa to help with development, to ensure there is no conflict of interest. So even the Democrats understand this is a sensitive issue with Bill Clinton.
I'll grant you that it is a sensitive issue, but I think Hillary will do all right on her own if they can get past Bill.
The big problem is not so much his business deals. They could be a problem. It's his ego. Remember he interfered with her campaign at every step?
Absolutely, yes.
Do you remember he kept trying to undermine her and override her at every turn? He was jealous of her?
Yeah.
She's going to way overtake him now. You know, he's globetrotting with his foundations and getting all of these accolades and awards. He's not going to really like seeing his wife with such a great position. And, you know, she gets Air Force 3. You know what he's got? He's got his friend's Gulfstreams. Now, I'm nothing against the Gulfstream 5 or any of those great planes, but nothing compared to Air Force 3. Let's put it down on an ego level.
Well, maybe that's the price that he has to pay for all of his little extracurricular activities. You know?
Well, they all have beds in them, so, I mean, that's not an issue. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Breaking news, Hillary Clinton to accept job Secretary of State offered by Barack Obama. And my question is, will Bill Gates trouble Hillary at State? Second story, Senator agrees with Savage. He says Paulson may be bailing out his friends. Senator Inhofe will join us shortly on the Savage Nation. There are many other stories that I'd like to get to. We're not going to get to them right now. We have a winner. I raised the question. We have one literate listener in New York City, Joe in New York. Go ahead. I asked the question when I said Hillary Clinton is a peripatetic senator, so she's perfect for the job as Secretary of State. What does the word peripatetic mean?
I believe it means taking long walks and having long, deep discussions while doing it. Is that correct?
You win. You see, you must have gone to the same high school I went to.
I went to Xaverian in Brooklyn, actually.
Well, so you studied Greek?
No, I studied English.
Well, to many Americans today, it's Greek to them. English is Greek to them.
I know, but you've got
Americans today who can't speak their native language. They're illiterate in their native language, let alone English. They grunt, but they vote. The important thing is not whether they are literates, that they can put their fingerprint on a voting card. That's how Obama became president. Peripatetic, it's from the Latin and then from the Greek. Given to walking about, especially while disputing, a name given to followers of Aristotle. Isn't that amazing? In other words, talking and walking.
Right.
So you win. You win a free copy of what?
Of Psychological Nudity.
Bing. Oh, you got a good memory. Joe, are you retired?
Am I retired? No, not yet. In a few years.
What do you do for a living?
I'm an accountant and part-time security guard.
It's amazing that you have such a good education, Joe. Stay on the line. Free copy going out to you. No other callers on peripatetic. I'll try to throw in a big word every once in a while, not to show you how smart I am, because I try not to use big words, and once in a while, the big word is the only word, so you have to use the big word. I know it's unfashionable in America, particularly after 8 years of George Bush, to use anything with more than a monosyllable, but occasionally we have to go to the dual syllable. Even if you go to three already, you lose the audience. The first rule of talk radio is keep it simple, stupid. And if you use a three-syllable word, then you got to mispronounce it so they don't feel insulted. That was George Bush's genius, was to purposely mispronounce and mangle words in order to make you feel smarter than him. Now, that's a pretty good art. If you can make the voter feel smarter than the president. Look at this, perimeter, period, peripatetic, periphery, periphrasis. I have a book that I love. I've had it since forever, Concise Etymological Dictionary of the English Language by Skeet. I bought this 30 years ago. You should get it for your child. It's the Etymological Dictionary of the English Language from Oxford University Press. I paid $13 for it when I bought it. Let's see, I'm flipping. Indulge me a minute. I bought it in 1882. No, I'm sorry, 1983. I was joking. It was first printed in 1882 when English was still used in the world before it became destroyed by talk show hosts from New York. But this book was printed, and I got it in 1983. Etymological means the origin of words. It's fabulous. It really is. It's unbelievable. Your children should have this book. Well, how did they have people who could do that in those days, write dictionaries? Today they write, oh, don't even get me started, please. Etymological, peripatetic. Read all about it on the Savage Nation when I come back. Senator Inhofe on Henry Paulson's strange disbursement of bailout funds, to say the least.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We're going to talk about the biggest issue really in America today. I know Senator Hillary Clinton accepted the job as Secretary of State. We've been talking about that. We've been talking about whether GM should be bailed out. But let's go back to basics here. $700 billion, $1 trillion. Nobody knows where it's going. U.S. Senator Jim Inhofe, Republican Oklahoma, seems to be the only senator in America who is raising questions about about Treasury Secretary Paulson. Senator Inhofe joins us now on the Savage Nation. Senator, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Michael. Nice to be back with you.
Well, you may be the only fiscal conservative left in Congress, but you're asking what most Americans want asked. How could the former CEO of Goldman Sachs be allowed to disperse money, some of which went right to Goldman Sachs?
$10 billion, yeah.
Oh, well, that's a small amount, $10 billion, isn't it?
Yeah, well, in the scope of things, you know, Michael, I know that you've probably helped your people to understand what $700 billion is. I did a little study. The 139 million families in America file tax returns. If you do
right.
the math, that's $5,000 a family. Now, when he was making his pitch, he said the only way to save this nation from total collapse was to buy these troubled assets out. And at that time, I asked questions. I said, all right, tell me the criteria you'd use for troubled assets. Well, they didn't have that. What companies would assets would you be buying from? Didn't have that. Anyway, this thing that passed in two segments. The first $350 billion he's already has access to and probably has spent almost all of it. We don't even know. Now, that tells you something when a senior United States senator doesn't even know how much money's been spent. The other 350 is out there, and he's going to try to get his hands on that. I introduced a bill today, and one of the reasons I was excited when you called to invite me on your show. It's Senate Bill 3683. This is the only way out of this thing, Michael, because what it does is two things. It freezes the spending so he can't do any more now, and it stops him from accessing to the other $350 billion. I introduced it today, talked on the floor about it. Yeah, Senate Bill 3683. I don't know of any other vehicle left.
Well, I would think that even the Obama administration would want some controls over the money that the taxpayers are sending to Washington. This isn't just a fiscal conservative thing. Isn't this a fiscally responsible issue?
Well, yeah, but what are you looking for in the Obama administration? They're going to be using this money. Right now they're talking about using some of it for the auto industry. You've been talking about that. But that's not what this is supposed to be. This is written so loosely, anything that one man, one unelected bureaucrat wants to spend it on, he can. I don't have anything personally against Paulson. I've not liked him on his China policy and some of the other things. But when I read this and thought, what we're going to do is give them authority to spend this in any way they want, on anything they want, and they've done it. And you and I don't know right now how much has been spent in different areas.
But, Senator Inhofe, your bill is 3683, and we want it passed. The thing is, we want the senators to vote yes on 3683. Is that what we're trying to get the people to understand?
In the next few days during this lame duck session, you're going to hear Paulson and the rest of them saying, well, we've decided we're not going to dip into the other $350 billion, so it's not necessary to pass something like this. And then as soon as we're out of town, it's going to happen. I can just remember you heard it here.
But isn't this unprecedented that a Treasury Secretary has assumed so much power over the Treasury?
I think it's unprecedented that anyone who is unelected has ever had this much power over this amount of money.
Well, I read that he rewrote tax laws several weeks ago. I read this in the Wall Street Journal. there was a new tax law written in a one-sentence bill, so to speak, or a law, and they said in the Wall Street Journal he didn't even have the authority to rewrite tax law. How is he getting away with this?
Oh, he's getting away. He's going to get away with it. We don't. The only way to stop him is do it legislatively right now. You and I have talked in the past about different things that happen that are unconstitutional, yet they still have a way of passing. In this case, the discussion here in Washington, where I'm sitting right now, is, well, do we want to have the who wants authority over this thing? Who want jurisdiction in the Finance Committee or the Banking Committee? Then they're talking about this special inspector general. By the time they'd get around to doing this, all that money would have been spent anyway. That's how insane this thing is.
I want to repeat, the Senate bill that you've authored is 3683, Senator?
Yeah. Michael, we got to stop the bleeding. This is the problem. They're treating the patient, but the bleeding's still going on. And the only way to do it is to freeze it. And this is a vehicle, the only vehicle out there. And that's why I'm hoping that, you know, people will pay attention, will apply a little pressure. The bill passed 75 to 24. The 24 of us voted against it. All we'd need would be about a third of those who voted for it to change, and we could stop this thing.
You're quoted, Senator, in the Tulsa World as saying, we don't know how much money he's given away to anyone. It could be to his friends. It could be to anybody else. Shouldn't this be investigated? Who investigates him?
Well, yeah, we can investigate it. You appoint a committee to do that. They'd be working on it the next 2 years. I'm worried about stopping the $700 billion now or the $300
billion. Okay, so you're dealing with pragmatic necessities of the moment. All right, look, the best I can do is keep bringing this up all week, Senate Bill 3683. When is it going to be voted on?
Well, I don't know. Harry's going to have to decide. Now, Harry Reid might decide to go ahead and do it because it's a conservative Republican that is bringing it up, and this lets them off the hook. And so who knows? We may be able to get it up. But, it's, you know, I don't know any other way of doing it right now.
Do you have much support for this bill, Senator Inhofe? Do you have much support right now? Are there people who support you in this endeavor?
Today, I'm sure that all 24 who voted against the legislation that's out there right now will support it. It's a matter of peeling it off. 26 more is what it'd take.
Are there any Democrats who approve of this?
Well, yeah, there are. There are some Democrats, actually, that voted against this. I should have that in front of me, and I don't. So,
no, I'm just asking, is there some kind of a bipartisanship here that we can count on? Surely it's not going to be only a Republican thing. I would think that Democrats would want fiscal responsibility.
No, we've got to have Democrats to reach the number. So but this thing is not entirely partisan, Michael, like a lot of things are. You know, you're talking about the global warming thing. I sat out there for 5 years all by myself on this thing. Now people realize that the science isn't there and that it'd be a $300 billion.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's a new movie out now from Ireland from ex-liberals or real leftists who were saying the global warming hysteria is hysteria being put forward by Al Gore and his stooges. You've been in the forefront on that.
Well, it's been lonely. But nonetheless, I think we can still win that thing in spite of the outcome of this election. But let's deal with just one bit of hysteria at a time. Currently, it's the $700 billion or what's left of it, and let's try to save that for the taxpayers.
I'm going to let you go, Senator. I know you've got a very busy schedule today. Again, the bill is 3683, Senate Bill 3683. U.S. Senator Jim Inhofe is trying to get some responsibility or accountability, really, from Secretary Paulson, who seems to be acting like the czar of our tax dollars.
Thank you so much, Michael, for what you do.
God bless Oklahoma for electing you. It is 40. Look at that. See, that's the real America. Maybe I should move to Tulsa. And we'll talk about that another time. It's a very small state, but isn't it beautiful that we have a state with a senator who actually does the people's business instead of doing the people? See, most senators do the people. This senator does the people's business, and that's a good, healthy change for a while. Can you play one of the songs right now, either
Oklahoma? I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee, a place where even squares can have a ball. We still wave
a... sounds like I'm on glue. Turn it off. I can't. I like country and western, but it has to be faster. I feel like I've stepped into a time warp, and I've cotton candy between my ears. This is too slow for me. You got to drink a long neck beer or 10, you know, and like have tight jeans on and the cowgirls, whatever. I mean, it's not my kind of music. Play some heavy metal for me right now. Even though I'm an older guy, I like it. Just something fast, speedier. Chocolate, something with chocolate and caffeine in it. Give me the energy drink of music, like heavy metal. Do you have anything? What? Oh, turn that off. Come on. No, not that junk. What's wrong with you today? Can you play something sharp, fast? That's all. What do you got back there today? Turn it off. Break that. I never want to hear it. That's in dual. Maybe I don't even like heavy metal anymore. I think I'm changing. Bakersfield, California. Colleen, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi there. I'm so glad to talk to you.
Ooh, that sounds like LaBrie Waterbeds ad, you know, at midnight. What's on your mind?
Oh, I could talk to you about so many things, and I'd love to, but I'm going to keep it short and sweet, and I hope I don't ruin your mood. I wanted to ask you about Sarah Palin.
Okay, what about Sarah Palin?
Okay. Romney's great. Huckabee's great. Ronald Reagan was a governor. What's wrong with governors becoming vice presidents or presidents even?
You raise very good points, and at the risk of alienating you and all of my women listeners, I'm going to defer that question to another time. Is there anything else on your mind?
Well, Paulson.
Okay.
I'm wondering now if, since they already own part of the banks and part of the insurance companies and Wall Street, maybe they just want part of the car companies, too.
Who? The government?
Yes. Because
well, then we're becoming like China. These are nationalized industries.
Exactly.
How do we differ from China other than slave labor camps right now? Economically, they're more capitalistic than we are.
Well, they've got a long way to go, though, to catch up still.
You mean to catch up with our socialism?
Well, you know.
Colleen, which story in the book do you want to read if I send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity?
I'm a dog lover, so it'd have to be Tippy the dog. Any of them. I think you've got about three stories in your
book. I have three Tippy stories, Fat Pat and Tippy the dog. Tippy the dog would let people in, not out, how our immigration policy should be. And finally and sadly, Tippy dies and is thrown into a garbage truck. It's sort of the whole Tippy trilogy there.
I would love to read all of them.
All right. You're going to get a free copy of the last few hundred copies of the first edition verse printing of Psych Nude. It will be winging its way out to you tomorrow. 1-800-449. Let's go to the bigger story, please. We got sidetracked by – it's a very important story. But there are the biggest story today is the one that broke an hour ago. Will Bill Gates trouble Hillary at State? Hillary Clinton plans to accept the job of Secretary of State offered by Barack Obama, who is reaching out to former rivals to build a broad coalition administration. Now, on the face of it, she's as qualified as any of the other people for the job. I mean, really, what was Condoleezza Rice's qualifications? Bush picked Condoleezza Rice, who was a Russia expert, just when we needed a China expert. And just when Russia started to cause us troubles, she had nothing to say. So she was a complete zero. I don't know of a Secretary of State. Well, I do know of one who did a good job, only one. There's only one Secretary of State that I know of in recent times that I would say did a fabulous job. And I think I know you know who I'm talking about. He lives in San Francisco. He's an all-around wonderful man, by what I hear. And the man did a fabulous job. But since him, you had Warren Christopher, a complete zero. You had Madeleine Albright, who was a clown and a hysteric. You had Condoleezza Rice, who was a complete failure at every level, never did anything right. I frankly think that off the record, I mean on the record, I'm on the record now, that Hillary Clinton will actually do a very good job as Secretary of State. For a number of reasons. One, forget the woman thing, okay? Just forget it. She's extremely well-known. She's not she's not an academician, okay? She's not a piano-playing swimmer from Stanford who nobody ever saw before. She's going to garner respect from people who don't even like women because she's a tough lady. She was almost president. They know that. They also liked her husband. That's a definite plus. The problem I have is the potential conflict of interest with her husband's business dealings, and I think that he really ought to cool it. That would be my opinion. I don't think this guy can continue to rake in business deals from abroad while she's Secretary of State. I would say one broad is enough. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is a mess. It's one gigantic mess with most senators and congressmen clueless as to how to get us out of this morass. This is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. You got the $25 billion auto bailout. okay? That's stalled right now with the Dems wanting to bail out the unions, saying they want to bail out the workers. I don't believe it at all. I think it's payback for the work that the unions did to get Obama elected, frankly. That's where most of the money's going to wind up. That's one man's opinion. How do I really know what's going to go on with it? Since the senator who was just on doesn't even know where the $350 billion went. He said it's unheard of that one guy who's unelected, Paulson, would have this much power over the Treasury and over our tax dollars. But okay, that's the government that you have. That's what the government I have. The big news today is that Hillary is going to be Secretary of State. And I frankly, you know, what am I going to say? I don't like it. I do like it. I mean, I have my opinion on it. My opinion is, putting aside Democrat, Republican, putting aside all the scandals around her, the only question I raise, given that my job is to raise questions, sometimes to give answers, is on my website. And the question I raise is in iambic pentameter. It is, will Bill Gates trouble Hillary at state? And what I mean by Bill Gates is not the man who owns Microsoft, obviously. New York City, Kevin, welcome to the Savage Nation from WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, thank you for taking my call. If you got a load of Bill Clinton lately, I think his philandering days and troublemaking days are behind him regarding Hillary.
Now, why did you come up with that conclusion? It's not the philandering that I'm talking about. That's his business. He's a private citizen. They're married. If she doesn't care, if that's not what they do after many years of marriage, it really isn't my business. So I don't care about his philandering. I mean, if the guy has a sex drive, good luck to him. I'm not talking about that.
But I think she'll make a wonderful Secretary of State. First of all, her best credential is that she's
born
and willing.
Kevin, did you hear me at all? Is it not coming back over the line?
I can hear you, Michael.
So I said his philandering is not an issue to me, whether it's real or not. The issue is the business deals he does internationally. Doesn't that concern you?
Anything Bill Clinton does has always concerned me, because everything he does is underhanded. And I think you were right on the money when he was trying to sabotage his wife's own candidacy.
He did? Yes, I said that through the whole year. Every time she moved ahead, he said something to undermine her. And if he couldn't undermine her directly, he then said something that was racially insensitive about Obama, or hinted at it, and it undermined her in that way. And he was very jealous of her. This is a cast of alpha dogs fighting for supremacy.
Every time he opened his mouth, you were right on the money with that, because that's exactly what his whole strategy was with her. You know, with that.
Right, so again, going back to the issue, I think she'll make a very good Secretary of State. Her policies are not going to be much different than the ones we've had under Condoleezza Rice, are they?
No, not at all. They're all white bread, run-of-the-mill issues.
Exactly. And it's a power trip. What do they really do at state? They undermine the military. Whenever the military looks like it's going to do something, they stop them.
Exactly. And she's got the best credential for dirty dinner jacket and the rest of the bums, because she's going to hand over Israel on a silver platter if it ever comes to that.
Well, let's talk about Israel again. It's always Israel, but here we go. Let's go with Israel again. I personally think the opposite is true. I believe that the Clintons were friendlier to Israel than Bush was.
Oh, really?
Well, I don't know what Bush has done with Israel recently that's, you could say, is pro-Israel. Rockets are flying into Israel, and the Israelis won't fire a shot back. They sit there stupefied because the government keeps them under control. I mean, I would say that's Bush, wouldn't you? The Iranians are threatening to wipe Israel off the map, and Bush tells Israel to do nothing.
And the terrible thing about it is nobody has done anything for Israel in the past. It's, what, 16?
Well, that's because people are, to be blunt with you, Americans are fed up with Israel. I'm sorry to tell you, Kevin. They're sick of it already. You know, I said this a while ago, and it got me in a lot of trouble. Israel has become America's Cuba. It's almost a vassal state of America, and the people here don't have any more patience for a government that seems to be as corrupt as our own.
You know, and it's not the corruption that's got me going down that path almost, Michael. It's the apathy of the Israeli people.
That's right. In other words, if they were still that can-do, vigorous Moshe Dayan, Golda Meir, we're not going to take it from those bums, those throwbacks. We're going to really give it to them. We'd be behind Israel. But they're the same. They seem to be as compromised as our government. They won't do a thing. And the people are saying, if they won't lift a finger to defend themselves, why should we die for them?
Exactly, and it's a shame, because they were tough people and they were a real power of example when it came to standing up for themselves. Now all of a sudden,
yeah, but look what happened. Take a look. There's a story today on my website about car bombs going off killing innocent bystanders, and they're not coming from the Palestinians. They're coming from the Israeli mafia, who apparently, according to this article, is fighting over recycling dollars. Can you believe this?
It's disconcerting when you hear that about Israel.
Yeah, well, so why should we support a corrupt country is what people are saying. Why? I mean, well, what's the special place Israel has, except in the hearts, truthfully, of the people that the left hates? This is the most amazing thing. The true fundamentalist Christian believes that Israel is so important.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Extra, extra, hear all about it on the Savage Nation. Will Bill Gates trouble Hillary at state? Yeah. It'll trouble her. Like anything else will trouble anybody? Yeah, like all the other senators who have wives or husbands doing business. Nah, it's nothing. It's a done deal. The Republicans will roll right over like puppies. And they can always get John McCain to do some jokes on one of the shows where the comedians, so-called, can't do a joke unless the writers, if the writers are on strike. And that's it. So it's done already. So she's secretary. It doesn't bother me, frankly. Frankly, I'm glad she's going to be a secretary of state. She no longer has a vote in the Senate. The question is, who's going to replace her? Who's going to take that job? Who could get the? Does she get to appoint them if she leaves or what? Is she going to make Spitzer the senator from New York? Just joking. But you got Schumer, who's a far left lunatic, who's got a big enough ego and a big enough mouth to be both senators from New York, so maybe he'll take both jobs. I don't know who's going to take that position. Hillary's sitting in Moynihan's seat, the liberal seat from New York. So if she's sitting in the liberal seat, you could just imagine what seat he's in. He's the conservative Schumer. You could just imagine. Schumer's the conservative senator from New York. Look what happened to this country, that a state as vast and as wide as New York has two liberal senators, a state as vast and as wide as diverse as California has two senators so far left they may as well be senators from Guam. It's unbelievable to me. So she'll be Secretary of State. Other top story, GM bailout, Ford bailout. Question, should they be bailed out? We've been talking about that. Michael Savage says yes and no. We can't afford to let them fail because for national security reasons we must have an assembly line capable of building our tanks and trucks should we need them. Don't laugh unless you want to be a complete lunatic. They built our tanks and our trucks during World War II, we're going to need them again as sure as I'm sitting here. That's unless we're going to have a whole takeover by China altogether, and we wouldn't even fire a shot. We'll just have little men with red stars running the country under new management. Third question on the Savage Nation. What position should McCain assume in the Obama administration? Answer, he should assume the position on his hands and knees, rim shot. Come on, that's it. Fires in L.A., why doesn't Obama just blow them out or issue an executive order to stop them? After all, he's God, rimshot. Go ahead. Again, did it once. You can't do it twice. All right, a little late, but never better late. It's like Phil Silver's like a bad nightclub act. This point is awful. You know, actually, it's not bad. The bad rimshot is not a bad joke unto itself. Extra, extra, hear all about it. What do you think of Hillary? That's all. Donna in Bakersfield, you're first up this hour. Go ahead. What's your opinion? Will Hillary be a good Secretary of State or not?
Thanks for taking my call. Hey, you know, I think you're right. I think you've got it right on. I think it will be Bill Gates. In fact, I think we have a Billary situation going on. I don't think that...
named it Bill Gates because there's no question in my mind he's going to undermine her or make a mistake in trying to do business. Forget about philandering. That's not the issue at all when I say Bill Gates. I'm talking about all his business deals around the world. They have to compromise her as Secretary of State. I think that's a concern.
Exactly, exactly. And I can actually see him utilizing this position to forward his agenda completely. I agree with you 100%.
I think it's an issue. It certainly should be raised by so-called Republicans, but since they have ceased to exist altogether, I doubt that we the people will have any voice in this at all. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com is the website. And we got some more callers around this country. Tucson, Arizona. Christian, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
My topic would be the national police force, public police force he wants to put up.
Who?
Obama. He wants that national civilian police force.
That was interesting that nobody in the midstream media asked him one question about it, nor any of the other issues that 80 million Americans were buzzing about. It just shows you how, you know, out of touch they are with reality.
And I was wondering if you thought there might be a connection between that and he wanted to do, you briefly touched on this 2 weeks ago, he wanted to do a mandatory 3-month enlistment for the youth.
Yeah, that was more, what's his name, the chief of staff, the guy from Israel. I can't remember his name. Rahm Emanuel. It's Rahm Emanuel's original idea in a book he wrote, that there should be 3 months national service for the youth. You know, on the face of it, I'm not against national service if it was really national service rather than some kind of enforcement powers that they would be given. I think that these slackers should be forced into some kind of national service. It would do them a lot of good. You know, maybe straighten them out to do 3 months of service.
2-year minimum.
Huh? What's wrong with that? I don't see any problem with that. You got a bunch of teenage bums doing nothing. You got kids growing up who can't drive a nail. They can't turn a screw. They don't have to use a shovel or a screwdriver. Why not give them national service? I'm not against that either.
I'm all for it.
Okay, so what'd you call about tonight?
I called it for a chance. I heard you just found 850 new copies, and then I wanted to know if you thought there was a connection between the two, but you don't seem to think so.
Wait, a connection between which two?
Between the mandatory minimum enlistment for 3 months and his new civilian security police force.
Oh. But what do you think that has to do with Hillary? Are you suggesting there's a connection with Hillary at state?
Oh, no, I don't think so, and I think she'll do all right. I think you're right about that.
All right, Christian, you're a good guy. You're calling from Arizona. You're getting a free book. If you can tell me one story you can't wait to read.
I'd love to read about one-armed Frank.
Again, the bad breath sells. All right, you got it. It's flying out. I did find it. I'm not, you know, you have to take me on my word. I thought the first printing was gone Friday. And then I found from the fulfillment house, they found 800 copies that were not, I don't know where they came from. I really don't know what happened. Maybe orders that didn't get fulfilled, but they found 800 copies of the first printing, first edition. But I have ordered first edition for a second printing, which is actually being shipped tomorrow. Coming up next will be a very interesting interview that I did very early in the day. New York City, WOR, David, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Before I talk about Hillary, I want to say I love your use of the English language. Ionic.
Yeah, well, I try to throw in a word that has more than two syllables every once in a while. I know we're not allowed to with George Bush still in the White House, so I use the word peripatetic. It's not a bad word. I learned it in high school. Figure we can use it now.
My mom, unfortunately, passed away, but she was a teacher, and she used to use all those expressions at home, onomatopoeia. She used to love to throw those words around.
Right. I use them with my children. I got them books that taught them how to use 3-4-syllable words when they were going into high school. I figured it would become important. Who knew the Internet would arrive and would produce illiteracy worldwide? You know, it's the Internet that has produced dumb illiteracy. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, over the past few years, we've got to live with Bush and his inane comments and Palin's confusion over NAFTA, Africa, Russia. The media would lead you to believe that the left is much more educated and refined. Paul Molsheim with the Star-Ledger joins us today to talk about some of the more intelligent comments made by members of the more educated elite left. Paul Molsheim, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me on again.
In a recent article, you say that the newspapers hide the inane comments that are made by people on the left.
Well, it was funny, but, you know, I got looking into Nancy Pelosi is every bit as much of an airhead as, you know, Sarah Palin is accused of being. She just hasn't been getting the press. And there was a really funny, recently on one of the television news shows, she was asked about, you know, she has investments in natural gas, she and her husband. At the same time, she's pushing for expanded use of natural gas. And the funny thing is she said she supported the expanded use of natural gas, quote, as a clean, cheap alternative to fossil fuels. Now, natural gas is a fossil fuel. I mean, I think it's pretty, you know, it's pretty obvious. I mean, it comes out of the ground. It's, you know, it's quite obviously a fossil fuel. And her spokesman had to, instead of the she's not stupid defense that we heard for in the Palin case, it was the she knew that all along defense, which was pretty funny. And in another case, it was, you know, the Kelo decision on eminent domain. The Senate Republicans had pushed a bill to cut off any federal funding for takings of property under eminent domain. And Pelosi said she opposed the bill because she didn't want to cut funding, quote, for the enforcement of any decision of the Supreme Court. But, of course, the court only said that governments could take land. It didn't say they had to fund the taking of land. It was such a stupid comment that people were saying, well, she must have been disingenuous. But it was just pure stupidity.
Pelosi isn't the only one making these so-called intelligent points.
Dianne Feinstein, it was great when she was at the Miguel Estrada hearings. This was, God knows how she could be on a committee overlooking judges, but overlooking a selection of judges. But Estrada happened to be on the liberal side of the 1993 Lopez gun-free school zones decision. The conservatives actually won that one, and they got the federal law thrown out that restricted gun possession near schools, because, you know, what would happen is some guy could be a hunter and live next door to a school and he'd be violating federal law. So it was just a stupid law. But she got in the midst of the Estrada hearing. She says, you do not have a judicial record. So for me, I can't make a judgment on whether you would follow the law. So I've got to try and kind of try in different areas. And then she went on to assume that he had taken the conservative side. To what extent do you believe that the Congress can regulate an area of dangerous firearms, particularly when those weapons travel in interstate commerce, when they affect commerce and tourism, and when they have such a devastating impact on the children of this country, which was classic, you know, it was bring the children in, totally overlooking the fact that he was on her side on that one. So it was pretty funny. So she's, you know, she's another one.
Well, what about Schumer, the genius? Certainly he's above making these kinds of comments, isn't he?
Yeah, in the same hearings, and this is really funny. I was only working from the transcript, but he says to Estrada, I'm not asking you for the quality of your legal reasoning. I'm asking you, you have certain predispositions. We all do. No one is a tabula rasa. And Estrada corrected him. He said, rasa, which the phrase is tabula rasa, not tabula rasa. Schumer ignored him and went on to say, no one comes in as a tabula rasa. Well, a tabula rasa is a pink tablet, a pink slate, actually, you know, and I think we all learn, I don't know, I think I learned it in high school, tabula rasa is a blank slate. So this is a really funny case of someone who's up for a judgeship actually correcting this knucklehead, and him not even noticing the correction because he's so busy being this big, important senator. You know, so it's just funny. I mean, these guys, and I deal with a lot of politicians on the state and federal level, and it's always a mistake to think that they're really bright people. You know, you tend to think that they might be, you know, like you, PhD types. But, I mean, these guys are guys, for the most part, who, you know, got through college and maybe somehow got through law school by studying real hard and cheating a bit, for the, you know. But they're just not very smart people. And this goes in both parties. I mean, it's very rare. I mean, you will find a guy who's got the brains of a scientist every once in a while. Like, we've actually got this guy, Rush Holt, who's a congressman from here, who literally is a rocket scientist and, you know, is very intelligent. But most of these guys, Democratic or Republican, are just people who can only get the bare outlines of an idea and really get lost in the minutiae.
How do you see Obama's presidency? Is he one of the smartest or just sort of part of the crowd?
I would say, yeah, I would put him, you know, at the top of the intelligence of the Dems. I mean, the rest of them are, you know, Pelosi. I mean, can you imagine him in his first sessions talking to Pelosi? I mean, he'll be doing everything he can not to have his eyes rolling to the ceiling when that's some of the things she'll say, you know? I mean, he's an extremely sharp guy, and you would think, like, Pelosi will start with this, you know, this airhead stuff, you know. I mean, by the way, our own former governor, later EPA commissioner, Christy Whitman, she was a Republican, same category. When she got to Washington, she talked about fossil-burning fuels, which, you know, was like, as if you take, like, an old dinosaur and throw it in your gas tank or something. I mean, you burn fossils to get fuels. It was like, wow. You know, you wonder at the kind of mind where, you know, you hear somebody say that and you go, like, fossil burning fuels. Whoa, what does she think, you know? And you can see Obama when he's dealing with Pelosi, he'll be like that. And, I mean, Harry Reid is more of an ideological hack, and he's probably reasonably intelligent. But a guy like that is going to spend his entire presidency trying to keep these lunkheads in line, you know? Just like Bill did. I mean, Bill was doing his best, I think. He had a lot of real, you know, you probably remember at the beginning of the Clinton presidency, he made the mistake of going out on the limb with gays in the military and immediately, you know, realized that you just can't pander to the left wing of your party or your presidency is over immediately. And, I think Obama's smart enough. I mean, I think Obama's going to get in there and he's going to have the pressure from these guys. And I think he'll, you know, he's going to be pretty pragmatic. I mean, people don't understand it, but his economic advisor, Austin Goolsbee, is from the Chicago School, which is the Milton Friedman School, which is a very free market, almost right-wing way of looking at the world. If a Republican had a Chicago School economic advisor, all the liberals would be going crazy, calling him a crazed right-winger and, you know, bringing up Pinochet and Chile and all that stuff. So if he stays with those guys, I think he's going to be, you know, fairly middle of the road, fighting the whole presidency against these real left-wing nuts. And, you know, if he wants to get reelected, he's going to have to – I think he's smart enough to know if he wants to get reelected, he's got to keep those left-wing nuts in a box, you know, the Free Mumia crowd and the – I mean, all the left-wing nuts are going to resurface that we had in the 90s that were kind of out of the news. You're going to see all these guys come out of the woodwork and try and get his attention. You know, and the question is going to be whether he'll be smart enough. But I think he's a sharp, ambitious guy with no principles, which is good. You know, it's better than having a Democrat in there with principles, God knows.
Paul Mulshein, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Well, thanks a lot, Mike. It was great talking to you.
We've all heard the talk about the unfairness doctrine being, you know, pushed around by the left. This doctrine is supposed to bring equal time to both sides. You know, we really know it will be used to try to shut down one side, conservative talk radio. The people pushing the unfairness doctrine say that it's good for the people, and it will be used only to make things fair and balanced. Our next guest is Selwyn Duke, and he's joining us today to give us his opinion on what he thinks of the left's fairness doctrine. Selwyn Duke, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Great to be with you again.
Well, what comes to your mind about this absurd fairness doctrine?
Michael, I know you've been talking a lot about the so-called fairness doctrine, that legislation that targets talk radio for destruction. Well, I was thinking about this subject quite a while ago, and I thought of a good way of putting the matter in perspective. So I have a story for you. If you're old enough to remember the days when freak shows were in carnivals and not daytime television, you may know about the Barker and the Shill. Now, these were carnival employees who both worked to entice customers into entering the mysterious realm of the sideshow. But their methods were very different. The Barker, and technically he was called, believe it or not, the Talker, was a P.T. Barnum-like character. He was a bold salesman who sang the praises of the exhibits. And although he was given to the hyperbole of marketing, he made no bones about his agenda. He wanted your business. But the shill now, well, he was a very different animal. His job was to stand amidst the crowd and pose as one of their number. He would then feign awe as he claimed to have seen the show and that it was a truly jaw-dropping experience. Now, understand what he was doing. He was trading on his illusion of impartiality, knowing it gave him a capacity to sway people that the talker, with his obvious agenda, could never have. Now, Michael, I'm sure you see how this relates to the unfairness doctrine. The doctrine's advocates talk about fairness and that we have to give the other side its day in court. But there's a problem with this, and it's that this regulation would be applied to talk radio, but not arenas dominated by liberal thought, a perfect example of which is the ever-present mainstream media.
Well, exactly. They don't want to limit everybody, just those of us who speak our minds.
Well, the mainstream press, let's just say, it's more subtle in its opinion-making. Now, the critics will say this is how it should be. They'll say, we don't have to worry about responsible journalists. It's those acid-tongued firebrands who pollute discourse with their pyro-polemics who bedevil us. And on the surface, this sounds convincing. And this is why I tell you about the talker and the shill. Look, there's a dirty little secret behind the fairness doctrine, and here it is. It punishes the honest. Think about it. Radio hosts are the talkers. They wear their banners openly, telling you what they believe and who they are. Now, are they brash and hyperbolic sometimes? Sure, but that's the point. There's no pretense. There's no guile. You know what they want you to believe. You know what they're selling and if you're buying. But the mainstream media, on the other hand, is different. It's a shill. Of course, I don't mean a shill working with talk radio. The mainstream media's talkers are entities such as MoveOn.org and Media Matters, but they're shills nonetheless. They're dishonest to the core.
Well, who are they really shilling for, the Democrats or both parties?
They masquerade as impartial purveyors of information. They want you to think they're just like Joe Friday. They're just interested in the facts, ma'am. And then, you know what they do. They flutter their eyes and read their teleprompters, and we're supposed to believe God graced them with a singular ability to render facts uncolored by personal perspective. But you know what? The shill media are about as impartial as an imam in a comparative religion class. I mean, look at what these propagandists do. Here are some examples. These shills used to call Republican reductions in the rate of spending growth budget cuts. They call pro-lifers anti-abortion activists, but they don't call pro-choice groups pro-abortion, do they? And worse still, these shills have called terrorists things like insurgents. And then, what do these shills call hate crime? Well, look, to them, it's only hate crime when the victim's group has victim status. And Michael, statistics paint the same picture. In fact, they tell us that the shill media are at least as ideologically monolithic as talk radio. Listen to this. For instance, in 1992, 89% of Washington journalists voted for Bill Clinton. In 1996, the figure was 92%. And even outside the Beltway, reporters favored Democrats by about a 3-to-1 margin.
Well, how could that be fair?
Look, don't miss the point here. The issue isn't the nature or pervasiveness of the bias, but the insidiousness of the bias. The shill media are the truly dangerous ones because of their illusion of impartiality. And just to illustrate what I'm talking about, listen to this. We're supposed to be able to trust what Consumer Reports says about Buick a lot more than what Buick says about Buick, right? But what if we discovered that Buick's marketing arm was masquerading as a consumer advocacy magazine? Wouldn't we want that deceit revealed? Because remember, brainwashing is only effective if you're not aware it's occurring. And this is why the unfairness doctrine is an insult to our intelligence. Its message is this. Listen, hey, hide your bias well, be a slick propagandist, and no one will bother you. but dare not tell the truth. The message is, you see, like a pretentious literary critic, we appreciate subtlety and hate straightness. Lying lips trump truthful tongues every time. So, Michael, I was thinking, you know what would be better than a fairness doctrine? A truth in media doctrine. And here's how it works. When a correspondent is shown on the nightly news, there would have to be a caption, maybe something like this. Brian Williams, Barack Obama voter, or Katie Couric, lifelong Democrat. How's that?
Well, that would never happen. They have too much to hide, but I like the idea.
Let's strip the masks off the shills. Because, you know, what's going on now is a bit like letting Mullah Omar sing the praises of Islam while dressed as a Catholic priest. And think about it. Shouldn't these responsible journalists be at least as honest as talk radio hosts? Okay, I'm being funny. But in reality, you know what? Ensuring disclosure is a lot easier than securing fairness. I mean, how could you possibly achieve fairness? And I say this because media bias lies not just in how news is reported, but also in what they choose to report on in the first place. Hey, why did the shill media decide to focus on Abu Ghraib instead of the oil for food scandal? Why Sarah Palin's wardrobe and not Barack Obama's Socialist Party membership? Why something that helps or harms one cause but not another? Look, the bottom line is, the media choose the social battlefields and decide which way salvos will be fired. Human judgment is always in play. When they decide whether to broadcast or bury, how often a story will run, what terminology will describe it, and what imagery will accompany it. Then, Michael, the idea that fairness is ensured by disseminating the other side presupposes that there are only two sides. But listen, an issue isn't a coin. There are often a multitude of sides. So a dictate to present both sides simply means what? It simply means government input in the process of discriminating among agendas. And, by definition, it is discrimination, because only two sides will be chosen from among many. I mean, what about the Libertarians, the Greens, Vermont Progressives, Constitutionalists, Christian Freedom Party members, and Communists? Oh, one second. I made a mistake. I forgot. The Communists are giving us the fairness doctrine. Now, some will say the other side is simply a refutation of the talker's controversial positions. But here's the thing. Much of talk radio commentary is in fact a refutation of shill media positions. So as far as this goes, talk radio doesn't need to be balanced by the other side. It is the other side.
Exactly.
So what we really have to ask is, do we want affirmative action and quotas in commentary, huh? Is Big Brother capable of factoring millions of different elements into a media formula and developing a model for fairness? Yeah, that's really a great idea. Let's have the post office run the press. Of course, Michael, as you know, the dirty little secret is that the fairness doctrine is about everything but fairness. And you know what its advocates are? They're political shills. And they're mad about the fact that their talk radio test balloon, Airhead America, only succeeded in talking its way into Chapter 11. Their spirit is the same one, the very same one, that gives us speech codes in colleges and corporations and hate speech laws. And something occurs to me here. Maybe it's those who can teach do, and those who can't legislate. And something else occurs to me. This scheme conjures up a certain image in my mind. It's sort of funny. I picture a pouty little child complaining, "That's not fair," and stamping his foot with arms akimbo. But look, as John F. Kennedy once said, life's not fair. And Kennedy was right. I mean, some people are born with intelligence, others aren't. Some people possess logic, reason, sound ideas, philosophical depth, and powers of persuasion. Others don't. So, really, I can only conclude one thing. I guess the left's recourse to this ploy is a tacit admission that they bring no ammunition to the battlefield of debate. And now, well, I guess it seems they think big government is a substitute for big ideas.
Selwyn Duke, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, Thank you for having me on the show, and God bless you and your audience.
Savage.
Yes, it's me, and I'm in love again. Had no love and say you know when. You know I love you.
It is the Savage Live on the Savage Nation. Well, the big story is Hillary as Secretary of State. GM bailout. Paulson being out of control, like a spending drunk. I mean, there's a lot of big stories out there. And, of course, we still don't know why Saint Obama has not flown to L.A. and with the, you know, waving of his hand, stopped the forest fires. I just don't get it. I mean, he is God, or as close to God as we've ever had in America, according to the liberally insane people. I mean, liberalism is a mental disorder. There's no question about it. There may be a lot of them. Doesn't mean they're not all crazy. New York, WOR, Yaakov, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please, go ahead.
Hi, I'm a very new listener. I just want to say, last week when you said that everybody should turn on their lights, when you, by your count of three, I was on the Garden State Parkway traveling to New York, and I saw a pretty big response, about 5-6 cars flashing their high beams.
5-6 out of 50,000, that's not a lot of cars.
On the Garden State Parkway, on a quarter of a mile distance where I can...
No, I'm joking. No, I understand. That's okay, Yaakov. So how did you learn about the show?
My boss told me to listen to Savage.
Oh, my God. You work for a conservative boss in New York City? You better not let Chuck Schumer hear that.
That's Lakewood, New Jersey.
Yeah, you better not let it leak out to your senator, Schumer, because he wants to put this show off the air.
I live in New Jersey, and I voted for Zimmer, not for Lautenberg.
Okay, well, good luck. I'm glad you're a listener. Thank you very much. Albany, New York. Mike, you're up next. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Dr. Savage. What a pleasure to talk to you. Get right to the point. You were talking about Bill and B.O., and I just couldn't help but think how B.O. needs to keep his enemies close and his... You know, in
what, keep you the old Godfather adage, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer?
Bill did call him a Chicago thug. You know, I mean, that didn't hurt Obama. That didn't bother him because he was going to be president. But he had that.
I can't hear you. You'll have to speak up, Mike. I'm losing you.
Oh, he has that mentality. And I think it doesn't bother
him. So you're saying that the reason Obama appointed Hillary is twofold. One, to the women, for the women vote, and two, to keep her closer than she would be otherwise.
Exactly, and to appease Bill, and they just put her out in the, you know, sex state, and, you know.
All right, keep your enemies closer. Good call. We're at the end of day glass phase of the Savage Nation, where you get to fire your torpedo in 20 seconds or less if I call you. Just do it fast. You don't have to say I love you or I hate you or I'm a new listener or an old listener. Just say what you got to do, okay? Albany, New York. Greg, you're up on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Michael, I just heard on your just now that you said Hillary was Secretary of State. I have to thank Obama for finally getting rid of her here out of New York. But the reason I called is Woodchuck Bill. I bought the psychological nudity. Absolutely love the story.
So I finally got someone who called the show today who actually bought a book instead of calling to get a free one. Amazing. So what can I send you? Something else? Maybe I could send you a free copy of Healing Children Naturally. Maybe you deserve it.
That'd be great. I'd love that.
All right. Stay on the line. You're getting a free copy of Healing Children Naturally, something that's so important I never talk about it because it's establishing itself in its own way, okay? Other topics on the Savage Nation. Let's see. We got the Clinton story, New York Jay. We got to go to the West Coast now. We got too many on the East. Let's go to Houston. Phil, you're on the Savage Nation from Texas. What's on your mind, Phil?
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I think Hillary would be she'd be horrible as Secretary of State. She's horrible at anything, really. You know,
I know that you're a Hillary, you know, hater. Let's be honest. She's not a very charming woman. She has a terrible track record with an awful lot of baggage. But how could she be any worse than Madeleine Albright?
Well, she can't. But I'm just saying that
she'll be another Albright, you know, another long line of Secretaries of State. We're into it for the power and the pomp and circumstance, the power and the glory, as it were. The power and the glory, it has nothing to do with serving the people. You know that, and I know that. That's the sad truth, you know. Rhode Island, that's Donna in Rhode Island. Are you listening to me on WPRO?
Hi, Mike.
Donna, are you listening to the show? Are you listening to the show in Providence?
Yes, I know. I'm in Bristol, Rhode Island.
But are you hearing it on WPRO?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm hearing it out of New York, actually.
Okay, WOR, or you could hear it out of Boston on RKO. So what's on your mind tonight?
Basically, I think the reason why he picked Hillary was to keep his thumb on her. And I think Bill's going to be the happiest guy in the world tonight because he's going to be able to globetrot and do what he's going to do and not have to worry about Hillary always having to, you know, watching him. And
well, I think she gave up watching him a long time ago, don't you?
I know. But I have, can you imagine?
I mean, I really don't think she's that interested in him in that way, truthfully. I think she's a woman who gets off on her power. And, you know, she could do without that part of her life. It's over. You know, once was enough.
Excuse me?
Once was enough with him.
I know.
That's a joke. I mean, it's like such a good joke, no one understood it. All right, that's all. Dallas, Texas. John, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Well, first of all, hey, I appreciate the show. Greatly been listening to you for the last, I guess, year. Listen to you through a different form of primaries, of course, with this presidential election. And the choice, of course, Hillary Clinton, as far as being a Secretary of State, it's one of the worst choices ever for the simple reason she don't have the knowledge that she needs to deal with foreign leaders. Just by her being a president's wife and being affiliated with certain different type misconceptions of her running from sniper fire, all this and that, that doesn't qualify her. And she have consistently...
Look, I'm not here to take her place, but she does have name recognition. She has personal knowledge of most of the world leaders from all those years in the White House. Plus, she's very forceful. So she can browbeat a lot of the world leaders. I mean, those are pluses, aren't they?
No. For the simple reason, she haven't really sat at no table to make any form of decision. She haven't really even accepted any negative or positive input or output. She haven't given any either. The only thing she ever did is gotten...
Well, John, you're a thoughtful man, and you actually want a public servant to have some experience, which, of course, makes you an idealist. And as you well know, we're never going to get public servants anymore. Those days are long gone. It's just a myth if we think we're going to get that. John, one story in the book that you can't wait to read, and a free copy goes out to you. Go ahead and name it.
You have a story as far as... one thing, first of all, Italians are some of my favorite people. You know, they're full of adventure. They're full of...
We only got 20 seconds, so name one story in that book, and it's going to you quick.
It's dealing with some spaghetti story. I love it.
All right, when pasta was spaghetti, when it was 25 cents when I was a kid, instead of $12 a plate right now, when pasta was spaghetti, everybody loves that one because we all wait for those days to return, you know? Well, with God's will and your listenership, I'll tell you who will return, your old friend Mike.
Savage.